In Puerto Rico, food is being rationed. There are lines to buy fuel and to get into shelters.
You can see the incredible force of the winds. That's when they slammed into the capital of Puerto Rico, San Juan.
I'm 54 years old. I've never seen devastation like this one.
The scarce images coming out of Puerto Rico show a stunning amount of loss and chaos, flooding rivers, toppled trees and power lines, people wading chest deep through water or waiting for rescue on rooftops. Perhaps due to disaster fatigue, perhaps due to the territory's second-class status, perhaps simply due to a paucity of pictures, the media coverage relative to the month's previous storms has been perfunctory. Still, from the scant reports emerging from the ravaged island since Maria made landfall Wednesday morning, there is one detail that has stood out.
The most severe impact was on Puerto Rico's power grid, and the entire island is still without electricity.
The most powerful storm to hit Puerto Rico in more than 80 years has knocked out power to the entire island.
And officials there predicting some areas will be out of electricity for up to 6 months.
3.5 million American citizens may be out of power and electrically pumped water for months, which is destined to all but shut down much of the economy and the society. But the storm damage has darker ramifications still. Yarmar Bonilla is currently a visiting scholar at the Russell Sage Foundation, where she's working on a book about the Puerto Rican political and economic crisis. She's also a professor of anthropology and Caribbean studies at Rutgers University. Yarmar, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here, even if it's under these circumstances.
Well, these circumstances. We are speaking Thursday afternoon. Tell me, please, what you know about where things stand in the wake of this hurricane.
Most of Puerto Rico is still without communication. Cell phone towers are down, a lot of landlines are down, and roads are still blocked. So there's still very little information about what has happened. News crews have gone out, particularly in the San Juan area where they're located. So we've had some footage of what's been going on in areas like Condado, Bayamón, Cataño, Levittown, which are closer to the metropolitan areas. But we still don't know a lot about what happened in the interior of the island and the mountainous zones where the eye of the hurricane actually made a direct hit and cut across the entire island.
Now, for Puerto Rico, this is catastrophe heaped upon catastrophe, the previous one being a 10-year economic depression and a dramatic loss of infrastructure over the last few years. There is a relationship between the amount of storm damage and the economic extremis. Can you tell me why so much infrastructure has been wiped out here?
The government has been focused very much on paying its debts, and it hasn't invested money into maintaining basic infrastructure and basic utilities like electricity and water, et cetera. Just last year, there was a historic 3-day blackout caused by a lack of maintenance, where most of the island was without power. And last year, there was a historic drought where some of the population, including myself and my family, we only had water a couple of days a week. There was also a lack of infrastructure to deal with that drought.
When you talk about cutting back on maintenance, we're speaking of the most basic precautions, like trimming tree branches so that they don't take down power lines in high winds. I guess it's no wonder that the lines are down across the island.
And part of what's ironic is that a lot of the money that will arrive for federal assistance, for emergency assistance, is going to be put towards maintenance that should have been done a decade ago. So a lot of the damage is not really due to the hurricane, but due to decades-long neglect. So I think when people were, to some extent, hopeful about the arrival of federal aid, it's in part because they want these infrastructures that have been neglected for so long to finally get attended to, but also in terms of getting contracts for reconstruction and building. And so there are some who will benefit from the hurricane.
All right, so the territory is out of money, and the FEMA assistance that will come in will be just to minimize the damage that has been done, which means that there is a call, as we heard on NPR, for the money to come from elsewhere.
A financial oversight board appointed by the U.S. Congress is now in charge of all of the island's finances. The board is considering a proposal to privatize the island's power authority, essentially selling it to the highest bidder. John Mudd, an attorney in Puerto Rico who's been following the island's financial troubles, says this disaster gives that proposal a big push.
It's going to be easier politically to do so, because then you can tell the government, hey guys, you don't have the money to do it, forget about it.
Yeah, it might seem weird that a first reaction to a natural disaster is a call for privatization, but it makes sense if you understand what has been happening in Puerto Rico, particularly since the imposition of the Fiscal Oversight Board, but long before. Just earlier this year, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal titled "For Sale, Colon, Puerto Rico." It shows everything that the government is putting up for sale. Regional airports, highway maintenance, tolls, many of which have already become privatized, waste management, which has already become a paid service rather than a public service, parking structures, student housing, and even ferry service for the islands of Vieques and Culebra. And so these outside companies, they come and they operate the local resources. Sometimes they give a kind of upfront cash payment in return for keeping the profits made from these utilities. Other times they make improvements, and the promise of these improvements is enough to hand over these services to them. Both water and electric systems are publicly owned, and they've been a source of a lot of debate leading up to the hurricane because they are both in deep debt. What might happen right now is that the damage caused by the hurricane might be used as an excuse to accelerate the privatization of these services, to simply hand over the electric system, which is the most profitable utility in Puerto Rico.
In struggling economies, there's always a temptation to sell off hard assets. The history of Eastern Europe since the end of the Cold War has been to auction off utilities, real estate, airports, and so on to the highest bidder, always offshore. And with it, a loss of sovereignty. Sovereignty is something that Puerto Rico has a tenuous grip on even now. What is the greatest risk that you see?
So in some ways, Puerto Rico is a testing ground for the United States and for the kind of privatization that could come in other parts of the world. But Puerto Rico also, because of its non-sovereign status, also allows for a particularity of tax loops and pockets of tax evasion that make this all the more compounded. For example, people are often shocked when I tell them that Puerto Rico is the site of the largest number of Walmarts and Walgreens in the world. And the reason why is because they benefit from special subsidies that are only possible in Puerto Rico, where they come in, they get free land, they get subsidies for training employees, and even subsidies for their payroll. In terms of the selling off of utilities, it's not just European countries and these other kind of failing economies overseas that we imagine. Right at home, Chicago privatized its parking meter system under the same kind of schema. And they later found that they could have made $974 million more if they had kept and operated their public tolls than to privatize them in this way.
Now, these are not ravings from your imagination. While you were working on your book, you spent some time interviewing various Puerto Ricans from the breadth of the society and the economy about the island's status. You had a particularly trenchant conversation with a wealth manager. What did this person have to say?
So they said that their clients were doing fairly well. And then particularly since the election of Trump, the stock market has gone up. And since they had their investments elsewhere, everything was great. And then sort of in passing, they said, now all we need is a hurricane. I have to admit, I was a bit shocked and slightly pained to hear this. But I assume that what they meant was that this hurricane would mean this flooding in of money. And they suggested that I buy stock in companies such as Home Depot and Costco. They thought these were the companies that were really going to benefit from Puerto Rico's economic recovery.
Wow. Be careful of what you wish for. The hurricane came, actually two of them. What came flooding in was flooding. But on this idea itself, is there a point where a little bit of catastrophe can be an economic boon?
Well, history tells us that it's complicated. So I have to admit, part of me would like to think that, okay, now federal money can rush in, now Puerto Rico can get the attention that it's needed for decades. However, I don't see that happening because I think, first of all, that the focus will be on quick fixes. Also, the Oversight Board has already said that they are going to expedite all these processes, which means they won't be up for public hearings. There won't be as much debate about where to go from here. And if we look at how places like Haiti and New Orleans, how they recovered after catastrophic events and the ways in which they rebuilt, it was not with an eye towards what these societies needed and had always needed, but rather they've become neoliberal experiments in terms of rethinking public education, rethinking housing, and they've also brought with them a huge displacement of the population. I think the worst case scenario is an intensification of what's already there. Puerto Rico already has higher income disparity than any of the 50 states of the U.S. And we see that in how people are impacted in moments like this. So some of the population will not have power for months. There are a lot of wealthy emigres or expats, if we can consider them that, but also wealthy Puerto Ricans who have generators, they have water tanks, and they're ready to fill in the gaps of this public sector that they've neglected.
Well, with respect, if not through private contractors and so forth, how to distribute federal funds?
Well, I think these companies such as Home Depot that I was encouraged to invest in and Walmart, which is the largest employer and retailer in Puerto Rico, I think they should give the materials necessary for this. Maybe don't have to give them away, but they could give them at cost. They could vow to not profit from this disaster as a kind of responsibility to a place that is full of citizens and consumers that use their products and have brought them great profit already.
You have an academic interest in all of this, but you also have very much a personal interest, a lot of family in Puerto Rico, and including your mom, with whom you were on the phone just as Maria was making landfall. Can you tell me about that conversation?
Well, first of all, I was shocked that her landline was working. To me, it was I can't describe what it meant. I know so many Puerto Ricans were not able and have not been able to talk to their family members. And so my mom, she decided to stay home alone in our house in Country Club, Puerto Rico, the modest working class neighborhood. Our house is made of cement and it's not in a flooding area, so she didn't think she was in any real life-threatening danger. But I spoke to her the night before the storm, and she explained to me all the preparations she had taken. She was in a safe room in the middle of the house that had no outside windows, and she had her battery-operated radio, and she had, bottled water, snacks, and she told me she was fully dressed and in case she had to run at some point, and she was wearing a whistle. It was in case she fell, had a stroke, or was crushed under debris so that she could call out, and make noise for rescue workers to find her. So I called her several times and we talked about everything she was experiencing, the fear she felt, because it's basically like a tornado, but with water, and that lasts much longer. So it's hours and hours of this wind and this water beating down around you. And so at one point I told her, Donald Trump tweeted that help was coming for Puerto Rico. And she got so mad. And it was actually the only moment when we were talking in which she cried. She said that it just pained her that in order for him to finally send some help to Puerto Rico, people's possessions had to be floating down the streets, And so I think all of that just was too much for her to bear.
Well, that was just as the storm was hitting. Have you spoken to her since? Is she okay?
She's in full resilient mode, without running water, without electricity, but she says she has the basics that she needs. It's going to be many days until roads clear and the government kind of reappears.
Yaramar, many thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yaramar Bonilla is a visiting scholar at the Russell Sage Foundation. where she's working on a manuscript about the Puerto Rican political and economic crisis. She's also a founder of the Puerto Rico Syllabus, a project offering critical tools for thinking about the debt crisis.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.